This is HeartWise, offering practical tips and time-proven guidelines to make your life healthier, happier, and more fulfilling. Today you'll learn simple Bible-based principles for building and maintaining optimum mental and physical health, all while deepening your relationship with your Creator. I'm your HeartWise host, Charles Mills. Sometimes you just have to be blunt. This is one of those times. So please forgive us if what we say in the next 25 minutes makes you a little uneasy, but disease can make you a little uneasy as well, so we figure that our way is less invasive. Our guest today spends his life making people uneasy. He also spends his life trying to make people healthy, so the end does, in my opinion, justify the means. Dr. Michael Greger is a founding member of the American College of Lifestyle Medicine and the heart and brains behind one of the most comprehensive clinical nutrition websites on the planet, nutritionfacts.org. I'm always happy when he agrees to be a guest on my show. Dr. Greger, welcome back to HeartWise.
So glad to be back.
Okay, let's get blunt. Breast cancer and constipation. Make the connection for us.
Yeah, there's been a very interesting research question over the decades. Why do constipated women appear to be at higher risk for breast cancer? So, for example, women who have three or more bowel movements a day appear to cut their risk of breast cancer in half. Mm-hmm. Kind of one movement per meal may cut one's risk of breast cancer in half. And the question is why? And it turns out that there are carcinogenic compounds called bile acids, which are byproducts that are excreted by our body through the gallbladder into our intestine for removal from the body. But if we don't have fiber in our system, you know, that's how we were built.
Right.
We were built to eat lots of whole plant foods containing lots of fiber, and our body knew that, so when it dumps the bile acids in our intestines, it assumes it's going to be flushed away. But if we aren't eating lots of fiber, meaning we're eating processed foods like white bread, white pasta, or we're eating animal products, meat, eggs, dairy, that have no fiber whatsoever, then the bile acids can just get reabsorbed into our intestines, circulate throughout our body, and are found to actually concentrate in breast tissue. And for some reason, breast tissue just seems to concentrate it out of the bloodstream, and it's been shown to have an estrogen-like cancer-promoting effect on breast tumor cells. And so the answer is to improve our fiber consumption and improve our intestinal transit by eating lots of whole plant foods. So that's fruits, vegetables, beans, nuts, seeds, whole grains, as many as we can eat every day.
Now, if someone realizes, you know, I have spent my whole life eating refined foods and my intestines and colon and all that is kind of sluggish, while they make the transition to more fiber, while they're waiting for that to happen, it could be that there may be damage to these areas. Are you a proponent of enemas and rectal syringes that inject a little water up there to help get things moving? Does that help? I know that John Harvey Kellogg used to do this on a regular basis.
Kellogg was actually one of our most preeminent physicians of all time in American history. Actually, probably the first physician to actually kind of establish nutritional science as kind of as a clinical branch of medicine. Of course, he would be very shocked and disappointed to see what his company had become, making Fruit Loops and such. So he had some brilliant ideas, among which was eating this plant-based diet. He also promoted staying away from stimulants such as tobacco and caffeine. But his evidence on the kind of colon cleansing, on the use of enemas, has not stood the test of time. Mm. We don't have good data to suggest that's useful for people that are healthy. I mean, in medicine, I mean, we can actually use enemas for various treatments, but for people who are just normally constipated, really what they just need to do is eat the kind of healthy diet that we were made to eat. And that should clear up the problem. One needn't go to those kind of more invasive procedures routinely.
All right, very good. We're talking with Dr. Michael Greger from nutritionfacts.org. And listener, I recommend that you go to that site. If you want to know anything about clinical nutrition, this guy and his team, check out not some, not most, but all of the English language and nutrition studies And he condenses them and compiles them in short little videos and little blogs and whatnot. It's all there at nutritionfacts.org. I go there on a regular basis to check out and see what's going on. All right, Dr. Greger, let's move on here. While we're on the subject, while we're still talking about constipation, you make a case here about childhood constipation and cow's milk. Again, make that connection for us.
You know, this is really one of the most shocking things I learned all year. This is one of the things where I just keep, you know, thinking, why didn't I learn this in medical school? I mean, is the dairy lobby so persuasive that a cheap, simple, safe, life-changing intervention like a dairy-free diet remains buried? What happened back in the 1950s? It was suggested that some cases of constipation among children might be due to the consumption of cow's milk. But it wasn't put to the test until 40 years later. You know, we used to think that chronic constipation in infants, young children, was all in their head. You know, Freud said they were anal retentive, maybe had some intestinal disorder. But what these researchers did, they just took 27 consecutive infants that showed up in their, you know, pediatrics clinic with chronic so-called idiopathic constipation, meaning we didn't know any underlying cause, no idea what was causing it, and all they did was just try removing cow's milk from their diet. And within 3 days, 21 of the 27 children were cured, completely, wow. Symptoms completely regressed as soon as they took milk out of the diet. Then when they accidentally had milk in their diet, it relapsed within 24, 48 hours, right? Just the constipation reappeared. And you could do that over and over and over again. But if they stuck with the milk-free diet, they stayed cured. And their eczema and wheezing went away in many cases. And so they conclude that, you know, many cases of chronic constipation in young children, more than three-quarters in this study, it seemed, were due to an underlying cow's milk. They thought it was an allergy. We're not exactly sure what it is. You know, it's chronic constipation is a real common problem these days in the U.S. They often prescribe laxatives. Sometimes I see kids who've been prescribed multiple laxatives. And so, you know, why didn't they just try this simple method of just removing cow's milk? And the reason is because it was an open study, meaning that the children, the parents, the doctors knew that they were removing cow's milk from the diet, and maybe there was some kind of placebo effect. So the real landmark study was in the New England Journal of Medicine. They did this double-blind crossover study. What they did was cow's milk, and then they switched cow's milk to soy milk without the parents or the children or even the doctors knowing. No one knew whether the kids were drinking cow's milk or whether they're drinking soy milk. And these were really these really sad off kids. So 65 kids suffering chronic constipation, all had been treated with laxatives, didn't work. 49 had what are called anal fissures, which is a rip or tear in the anus, very painful, inflammation, swelling. And so 2 weeks, gave them cow's milk or soy milk, and then switched it around. The cow's milk changed to soy milk changed to cow's milk. And what happened? Two-thirds of the children, constipation resolved when they were on the soy milk, came back when they were put back on cow's milk. And even the anal fissures and pain were cured. I mean, the tissues actually healed up. Once they stopped this inflammatory cow's milk, the fissures, the tears actually just healed right up. Then, you know, they challenged these children with cow's milk. The fissures came back. So it was very clear. But you know what they did in this study was they just switched, you know, the cow's milk to soy milk, but they did not remove the dairy from the rest of their diet. So they still may have been eating cheese. Maybe that's why only two-thirds were cured. And so what they finally did was a study for the first time, 2013. They took constipated kids off of all dairy. So not just liquid milk, but all sources of dairy, and not 68% like in the New England Journal study, but 100% were cured.
Wow.
Every single kid that came in constipated, you removed all dairy products, and they all came away cured. Why isn't this common knowledge?
Okay, let's talk about that just for a moment more here. Parents right now are saying, you know, hey, I've got a constipated kid. How do they know they're constipated? What constitutes constipation? How is that frequency of bowel movement, amount of bowel movement? We're talking about gross stuff here, but this is important stuff, Dr. Greger.
Yeah, and this was based on frequency of bowel movement and the consequences of constipation, such as this inflammation, swelling, and tears in the anus. And so this was, I mean, these were serious cases. And if it will work in these kind of serious cases, one would expect it to work in more mild cases as well. And it turns out cutting out milk helped anal fissures in adults, too. They were taking off all cow's milk. Pain went to zero, and then gave them cow's milk challenge, and again, came right back. Cow's milk may play a major contributing role to recurrent diaper rash as well. Really, you know, cow's milk is for baby cows.
Yes.
You know, human infants should be drinking mother's milk, and then when they get older, they should be weaned. You know, milk is for babies.
So you basically have told us earlier in the show that it's about one bowel movement per meal. Is that what we should be aiming for, Dr. Becker?
Well, that's what we see in populations that do not suffer from these so-called functional bowel disorders, okay. Don't suffer from constipation, from diverticulosis, these little outpouchings in our colon, don't suffer from varicose veins, don't suffer from hiatal hernia. These are some of the pressure diseases that come from straining at bowel movements. Mm-hmm. And it turns out the average of these populations that didn't suffer from any of these intestinal disorders was 3 a day.
Okay.
Now, that doesn't mean it. Now, it's a wide range. So just because that was the average, so some people, you know, once a day and don't suffer any of these problems. Others may need more, but that's kind of a, you know, that's a kind of a good guideline, something we should shoot for. And now to do that, one has to eat a tremendous amount of whole plant foods, the only place concentrated sources of fiber are found. And when we do that, we naturally have all this fiber going through our system, and it gets rid of not just the carcinogenic bile acids that may trigger our breast cancer, but gets rid of toxic heavy metals like lead and mercury from our body. I mean, that's the way our intestinal system is, the way our body gets rid of all its toxic byproducts, all the stuff it wants to get rid of. But, you know, intestines, what they do is they absorb. I mean, that's their role. And so if there's no fiber in there to latch onto these toxins, then those toxins just get reabsorbed right back into our system, and kind of we're undermining our own body's ability to detoxify by not eating enough fiber.
All right. We're talking with Dr. Michael Greger from NutritionFacts.org. We'll take a short break, and when we come back, we'll change the subject a little bit here. I think we've sort of talked about this one all we need to for today. When we come back, let's find out what is the best mouthwash that we can put into our mouth to help clean our teeth and our mouth and to make us healthy. And that's on our return, so everybody stay right where you are.
I'd like to think that one day, when we get to heaven, we're going to see a list of people. People like Jared and Susan, who were introduced to Jesus because of something we said. Or maybe it was as simple as a passing smile. But these people will look into their past and be able to say, "I'm here because of you." Recently, you may have heard that Heartwise Ministries has begun spreading the gospel to the young, the old, the sick, and the healthy. We want to take this type of medical programming to the non-believer and the person who has closed themselves off to traditional forms of outreach. If you believe as we do and want to support Heartwise so that together we can count more names on the Tree of Life, please consider donating today at heartwiseministries.org. That's heartwiseministries.org.
In his book, The Ultimate Prescription, now available from Tyndale House Publishers, cardiologist Dr. James Markham writes, "I never connected worship to health. All this changed dramatically when I began to see a coming together of two elements, biblical truths and science. As scientists gained the tools necessary to peer further and further into what makes life possible, I found that my faithful Bible began to make more sense. Study after study seemed to emphasize certain biblical passages, bringing to light their ancient truths. This merging of science and the Bible changed the way I regarded Scripture and launched me on a search for healing and the practice of medicine that continues to this day. Science was not refuting biblical truth. It was actually proving it." Dr. Markham's book, The Ultimate Prescription, is available from Amazon.com and wherever quality books are sold. To learn more about health from a biblical perspective, visit heartwiseministries.org. Welcome back to the program. I'm your host, Charles Mills. We're here with Dr. Michael Greger. He is a founding member of the American College of Lifestyle Medicine, and he's also the heart and brains behind one of the most comprehensive clinical nutrition information websites on the planet, nutritionfacts.org. Mouthwash. I was in the drugstore the other day, and mouthwash takes up an entire aisle. I mean, it goes from one end to the other. There's mint flavor, there's spearmint flavor, there's natural, there's, you know, chocolate. There's all kinds of mouthwashes there. What have you, in your studies, found to be an effective mouthwash for poor little old us?
The way we get cavities, the way we develop cavities, is actually caused by bacteria that produce acid that dig into our enamel. Mm-hmm. This bacteria is called Streptococcus mutans, kind of oral enemy number one. And you say, well, wait a second, if this plaque on our teeth which causes cavities is caused by bacteria, why not just use antibiotics? Mm-hmm. And the attempts have been made, but the antibiotics can cause a number of the side effects, such as teeth stains and nausea and antibiotic resistance. So they really kind of fell by the wayside, this thought that we could use antibiotics. But at least in a petri dish initially, we found that green tea effectively inhibited the growth of these bacteria. And look, green tea is safe, so what about in our mouth? And so what they did a study. They found that rinsing with green tea strongly inhibited the growth of plaque bacteria on our teeth within minutes. Huh. 7 minutes after swishing with green tea, the number of these bacteria in the plaque scraped from people's teeth was cut nearly in half. So, you know, if people swish sugar water in their mouths, within 3 minutes, the acidity on their teeth shoots up. That's how quickly we can start eating away our teeth, within just 3 minutes of eating a candy bar or something. But if we do that same thing, swish our mouth with sugar water, 20 minutes after having swished with some green tea, we've wiped out so many plaque bacteria that that sugar water no longer causes all that acid production. So using green tea as a mouthwash can really be quite an effective anti-plaque agent. What's typically used, and if you look at the mouthwashes that are sold commercially, the most common one has this compound called chlorhexidine in it, which is this antiseptic compound, which has actually been shown to cause DNA damage, not only in the cells within our mouth, but actually in our peripheral blood cells, meaning that it's absorbed in our body, even if we just swish it around in our mouth. And so we kind of have this sense, well, are we kind of stuck between chlorhexidine, which is shown to be the most useful, the most effective, but not safe, or green tea, which may be less effective, but is safe? Well, we didn't know what to do until finally a head-to-head battle, chlorhexidine mouthwash versus green tea mouthwash, and the green tea worked better than the chlorhexidine-reducing patch. So here we have something that's cheaper, safer, and better. So I encourage people. So basically, I just have a mason jar filled with green tea, kind of right next to the bathroom sink, mm-hmm. and just swish around in my mouth whenever I kind of think about it, whenever I pass by. And that can dramatically reduce the plaque-forming bacteria. Really miraculous, but of course, there's not a big industry out there that's profiting off of green tea. It's so cheap that many of us won't hear about it, and that's one of the things that I really like to bring to people. There may not be a commercial interest getting this information out there, but there's a human health interest, and that's what my work is all about.
Absolutely. That's the driving force behind nutritionfacts.org, and if you spend just a small amount of time there, listener, you'll understand exactly why I'm saying that. Moving now to a very common subject, and that is gluten and the fact that a lot of people need to be gluten-free. You have a section here in your video, how to diagnose gluten intolerance. How do we know if we have an intolerance to gluten, and what is it, and where is it, and how do we get rid of it?
Yeah, up until recently, the only causes of gluten sensitivity we knew of was something called celiac disease, which is this autoimmune disorder of our intestines, and then a kind of a form of wheat allergy where people who eat wheat break out in a rash. Until recently, those were the only two forms of gluten intolerance, which is this protein found in wheat that we were aware of. But recently, researchers understand, now there's a consensus report out now, understanding that appears to be a third type of gluten sensitivity. People that suffer symptoms of kind of irritable bowel disease can have changes in gastrointestinal function, can have diarrhea or constipation or bloating due to eating wheat, even if they don't have celiac disease and don't have wheat allergy. And the question is, well, how common is this? I mean, you go to the grocery store and you see all these gluten-free labels, you'd think that it was all over the place. But it turns out only about 1 in 1,000 people have wheat allergies. Only about 1 in 140 people have celiac disease. And similarly, about 1 in 100, a little more than 1%, appear to have this gluten sensitivity. So wheat and barley and rye, all the grains that contain gluten, are health-promoting foods for 98% of the population.
Mm.
In fact, have been shown to be associated with lower rates of hypertension and heart disease. So they're not just neutral, not just not harmful, but actually beneficial. Right? Whole wheat is a beneficial grain for 98% of the people. But for people that suffer these symptoms, first thing that they should do is get tested for celiac disease. It's important to know because that can actually have serious lifelong consequences. And if you're negative for celiac disease, then giving a gluten-free trial a try, getting rid of the breads and pastas and bagels, and seeing if your symptoms resolve is worth a try. And if they don't resolve, to go back on the gluten because, again, these gluten-containing grains, these whole grains, are beneficial for the vast majority of people.
All right, for those who don't know, could you spell celiac for us?
Yeah, celiac, C-E-L-I-A-C. And, you know, it's a rare, really serious disorder. And so it's important for people not just to go gluten-free, kind of without consulting their doctors, because it's important to know if indeed one has this disease only after, you know, having that disease removed from kind of the list of possible diagnoses, would then one be able to kind of experiment with a gluten-free diet on their own. But again, we're only talking about people who have these kind of daily abdominal symptoms, which they just can't ascribe to anything. They may be one of these rare people that could really benefit from excluding these three grains from their life.
You know, we at HeartWise are very interested in prevention, and we want to give information to as many people as possible, and that's what the website nutritionfacts.org does. And listener, I want to really let you know what you can find there. And if you ever think that you're alone, if you ever think that your search for health is a solitary endeavor on your part, Dr. Greger, tell me and tell our listeners how many hits your website, nutritionfacts.org, gets each month and what these people are looking for.
Oh, it's so wonderful. I'm so honored that people are so interested in all the work I do. So we're now to more than 1 million hits a month. Mm. And so since we started in November 2011, we've had more than 25 million hits, and everything on the website is free. I mean, there's no ads, no corporate sponsorship. There's not some like special membership section where only you have to pay money to see, you know, extra information. That's not how I think nutrition should work. That's not how medicine should work. Everyone should have access to life-saving, life-changing information to best help feed themselves and their family, and that's what the website's all about. I just put it up as a public service to everybody.
Again, that's nutritionfacts.org. Dr. Greger, thank you so much for being with us today. Appreciate your words of wisdom.
Can't wait till next time.
Absolutely, and until next time, this is Charles Mills along with Dr. Michael Greger inviting you to remain HeartWise. Goodbye, everyone. Thank you for joining us today on HeartWise. If you'd like more information on how to build and maintain optimum physical, mental, and spiritual health, log on to heartwiseministries.org. HeartWise is a listener-supported program, and your partnership with us would be greatly appreciated. Once again, our web address is heartwiseministries.org.